to the, I believe, what is the 42nd episode of Morning Trouble. I'm your host, John X. Bringing you the best in mid-conversation. Today we have a cupboard bear. It's just me and the man. Mr. Brooks with the good looks, Robert Brooks.
The cupboard ain't bear, homie. We got this.
That's true. You know, we can talk about this stuff all day. So big shout out to everybody that's not here. Mr. Gene Hopkins, Mr. Grant Lancaster, who?
Man's got his foot square on Grant's neck right now.
Square on his neck. Don't you flinch, boy. Don't you flinch. You won't be getting no paycheck. And Mr. Reggie Wood. And I gave a shout out to Mr. Johnson. He didn't get back to me, so I'm assuming he's not available tonight. So just me and you, Rob, just like it began, bro.
What it is, man. What's going on, homie?
Man, same different day. Actually better.
Like you sent out to the group earlier this TikTok about all these women choosing child support over baby daddy in the house.
Yeah.
Not astonishing. Not astonishing. That's the social media culture of the world that we live in. Everybody wants to be fly on somebody else's dime.
Damn. But I'm just so disappointed, bro. So was the listener. I mean, you know what? I could play the clip so that way people can have a better idea of how.
No, I mean, it's just a survey was taken. People were asked whether they would rather have the child support or a broke man in the house, but who was present
and participating. A good man.
And a lot of them want the bag instead. But that's the culture that we live in. Everybody wants the bag. And nobody knows. There's so many people who've been raised in single parent households. They don't even understand what they're missing when you don't have the other side.
They don't understand the value of a two parent household. That's for sure. You know, and that was kind of like my thought process this week when I was going over topics for the show, when I was talking about feminism. I listened to this conversation on TikTok and I was just like, whoa. You know, first of all, it was hosted by a guy, and he was basically saying that the matriarchy should take over. It should be all women, all the time. And, you know, if you take that and you preface it with this poll, where these women said there's basically no value in having a man around unless it's like for money, and they prefer not to have the man, they prefer just to have the money.
Sad. They don't know what they don't know.
You know, you remember the old saying, you know, if you want to go fast, go alone. If you want to go far, go together.
Yep. Still true.
They don't realize the limitations of being alone. Until it's too late. And it just brought a whole bunch of things, like, you know, up to me. You know, you have this thing in the culture where black women are always saying that, you know, why is a black man with a white woman and this and that and this? But you take a poll and you don't even want the brother. You don't want him. Not like she wants him. Is that disingenuous?
You know, we all think that we can buy our way out of the pain and affliction that we've been in. So everybody just wants the bag. Like, you know, the dear departed Kevin Samuel used to always say, you know, nobody is undervalued as the average man. Like, you talk to all these women and they all want six figures. They all want, regardless of the fact that they may be, you know, in nowhere near deserving of any of that stuff. They all think that they should, because all women are queens, all women are goddesses. They just hype each other up all the time, mm-hmm. and live this very unreal existence. Like, nobody tells women the absolute truth. Mm-hmm. Guys hear the truth all the time. Guys get told they're bums. Guys get told they're ugly. guys get kicked to the curb because they broke. You know, you try and drop some truth on a woman and you're going to get a face full of fire.
But I mean, the reality is that they're saying that men are oppressors.
And they have been. I mean, there's some truth to that.
Definitely.
You know, there's more than some truth to that. They have been. Men have misbehaved. You know, there's no denying that, but women have misbehaved also.
That was my point. I was all up in the comments in that thread because, you know, on TikTok, unless you have, I believe it's like 300 followers or something like that, you can't join in alive. And I have not been a like TikTok person.
I'm not on TikTok.
Yeah, I had joined TikTok, but I never actually went there for like, you know, pretty much a year. I never participated. And you know, whenever I join an app and the phone gives you the options to send into all your contacts to come in with you, I'd never do that.
No.
So I think that there's nothing but trouble involved with that.
Oh, you know, I got all kinds of strange numbers to be popping. I got numbers from 20 years ago to be popping up. I don't even know who you are anymore. I don't need to see you. I don't need to see you on this app.
Right. That's what I'm saying. It's like we're not engaging in that way. But that's kind of how the apps get you, because they know that you still have this idea about how you are and how you feel you should be viewed based upon 20 years ago. And you may temper it, and or you have people who you haven't spoken to in 20 years that get these new ideas about you based upon what's going on right now. I mean, we were just joking a couple of weeks ago about the fact that I was a crackhead, you know?
Yeah, I'm so glad to see you recover, bro. I was worried about you for a moment.
Thank you, man. It's like, you know, when I was out there stealing hubcaps and, you know, terrorizing women, it was difficult. And I pulled myself up from my bootstraps and, you know, became the same person that you see today.
Well, I'm just glad that you kept your teeth.
Well,
so many of those people who go through that, they lose their teeth.
That was the difficult part. It was.
Like, I'm assuming that you were, you know, between hits of crack, you were like rinsing your mouth out with like coconut oil or whatever to keep the bad bacteria away or something.
Well,
you managed to keep your teeth.
You know, between that and the stint as a personal trainer, I have to credit, even though the fact that I was out there late at night smoking, I still kept certain rules when it came to what I would put into my body. So, you know, I have, for example, Rob, I would smoke coke, but I wouldn't drink it. No carbonation. Certain foods I just didn't eat. Of course, we're joking right now. I hope nobody really takes this serious, but
my man was not on crack.
I was never on crack. Never on crack, never smoke crack, never. And as a matter of fact, it's like, you know, the reason why the rumor started, it's such a sad thing. It's because it was to justify someone talking to a woman that I didn't want anymore. It's like, you know, cats are just weird. Cats are just weird, bro. They're just really weird.
It's a weird planet right now, Matt. It really is.
It really is.
I was at the DMV yesterday. And I spent way too much time in the DMV yesterday. There's no getting around it. But there was a couple of old black folks in there. And in Jersey, there's this thing, Real ID. Like, mm-hmm. So your New Jersey driver's license after next year will not be eligible to travel, like to get on an airplane with and things like that, unless you get this Real ID.
Okay.
And so when you fill out the paperwork for this Real ID, like you cannot make any mistakes. And this woman went up there four times. She kept screwing up the card. She kept making mistakes on the card. Mm-hmm. So the guy, hey, you got to go back. You got to fill this out. You messed this up, blah, blah, blah. And she's cussing and fussing. And like, I wanted to leave just because I was tired of hearing her. Like, I didn't want to be bathed in that negative energy.
Right.
Like, yo, you keep fucking up the card. Why are you cussing him out? Like, cuss yourself out. Like, you the fool who put the name of your city where he asked for the name of your county. Like, you did that, not him.
Personal responsibility, like, is not big.
Regardless of whether you think it's bullshit or not, it is what it is. This is the thing.
It's just a simple form. You know, everyone feels like every time they're aggressed, they have the right to actually
it's all personal. Like it's as if somebody's doing something to them.
Right.
And the amount of people that I saw, there was a guy who had, I didn't want to add, he was trying to tell everybody his story and I was really dodging hard to get away. But his appointment was an hour before mine. Mm-hmm. And apparently he messed up his paperwork so many times that he was seven numbers behind me.
Mm.
So, I mean, he had been there since 11:30. My appointment was at 12:40. He had been there since 11:30. I got out of there at 3:10 and dude was still waiting.
Wow.
And, you know, I can't believe they're doing this. Like, I kept thinking, I can't believe you can't fill out a fucking form, right?
Right. Well, that's the thing. It's like, it's somebody else's fault. It's somebody else's problem. That's the thing with that whole, like, I hated to listen to that conversation, Rob. I really did. Because it was really like jaw dropping to me. Because I'm like, you know, and you know me, I'm trolling. I'm going to throw in questions that's really pissing these people off.
Uh-huh.
And the one thing that I threw in there was like, this guy was talking about, well, everything should be women based. It should be, they should be the ones in control. And one comment I made was like, well, you don't think that there are female bums too? Lots of female bums.
Well, there are lots of female bums, but you know, one of the things that I used to always enjoy in Kevin do is you make these women own up to the fact they're like, oh, this guy's a bum. This guy's a bum. Well, why'd you sleep with him?
Right.
This guy ain't shit. Well, why'd you sleep with him? Why'd you have two babies with him if he ain't shit?
Right.
Like, at what point do you take responsibility for the fact that you let this motherfucker into your body?
Right.
If you know you letting niggas who ain't nothing into your body, why ain't you on the pill?
Exactly. Exactly. And it's really that simple. If you want to have, listen, if sex is the recreation that you choose, okay, protect yourself. So that way you don't end up with a bunch of babies by, you know, men that you're not interested in, that you feel are beneath you, which is essentially what they're saying. They're saying that they're beneath them. The second thing that I said was,
if they were beneath you, why'd you let them get above you?
Well, this is the second, this is the second thing that I said. The second thing that I said was that any idealism or group that's based upon gender is bound to fail. Misogyny is bound to fail. Feminism is bound to fail. If you think that one group is based upon men or women, because you can't, it's so fucking dumb to make decisions based upon the gender of the person alone. It just doesn't make any sense. You know how many people you eliminate from history and from great accomplishments, if that's the way that you're using, that's the metric that you're using to judge people?
But that's, a lot of it is in reaction to the fact that that's how a lot of decisions were made for hundreds and thousands of years. Like, women were just discounted, just the same way that Black people were just discounted in this country. And so then you have, you know, the reaction to that, which is to become
overreaction.
The overreaction, but, you know, to then get your energies together, create your, you know, bundle your energies together and try to push this group ahead of that group.
Right. Well, to me, it just doesn't make any sense, because I'm always for common sense. So common sense says to me that you hire the best person, you employ the best person, you put the best person in position for that role. And anyone who doesn't do that is really the problem.
Yeah, but sometimes, like, the concept of the best person is problematic in that in hiring, you know, at most jobs, 90% of the jobs, you can probably take the top five candidates and either one of those five that you hire, you're going to be okay. Like, there really isn't, rarely is there a person who's just so much ahead of the crowd. They're like, we have to hire that person. There's only one person who's going to do this job great. It's that person.
Okay.
Like, when I talk to some of my people about, so when I got bumped up at my gig, you know, I had to replace myself. Mm-hmm. And it was short notice. Like, I got my promotion in February, mm-hmm. 6 weeks ahead of the season. So now I got to find somebody to engineer 81 games at least. So I reach back and I grab the guy who trained me, mm-hmm. who I'd been working with anyway. He had been then engineering games with us, whatever. And I got another guy who wasn't really a good engineer, but I knew he was reliable and I knew he would sort of run with it. Like I knew he understood the game and I knew he would run with it. But I wound up bringing in two white guys.
Mm-hmm.
My office is littered with, when I got the job, 85% of the people on staff did not have a resume on file. There was a job opening. Somebody said, I know a guy. Boom, you dropped it in. And so you do that over 20, 40 years, and you look around, and that's how in a city that at one point was greater than 50% African-American, you know, you got four black executives, you know, out of 260 people.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, sometimes you have to craft the answers, not simply, I got to get the best guy. Like sometimes if you want diversity, if you want the thing to sound different, you got to let it sound different. You got to let it be different. And so sometimes you have to, you know, like the next time I go to, if I have to replace myself again, I'm at least going to try. I have, you know, I've added into the rotation two brothers. I got a woman in the rotation now. So just in case, like we can go, you know, they may not become the guy, mm-hmm. but at least they're going to be in the running. At least I got them in place now. So if something happens, they're in the conversation.
Right.
And so that, like hiring the best person, sometimes it's, you know, I tell people all the time, like you take your top five candidates, put a bag over the top of them, hit one of them on the head. Whoever falls down out of the bag, that's your guy. When he wakes up, that's your guy. And you're going to be okay.
Right. Well, sometimes it takes effort, is what you're saying. You have to go the extra mile in order
because of what we have done for 400 years here in America, that causes us to have to take extra steps sometimes if we're going to level the playing field. Interested in leveling the playing field.
Well, you just made the best argument against diversity, equity, and inclusion that you could possibly make. What you're saying about making that effort is exactly what the powers that be or the opposition to those programs have been working very hard to make sure it doesn't happen, that you don't reach back and you don't, like, you know. And what you're saying is just really something very simple, which is being prepared with a resume. And it kind of broke it down. I don't know if we talked about it last week or whether it just comes to my head, but you know, I from listening to all these different platforms, mm-hmm. what I'm getting from the black community in inner city, a lot of black people in the inner city community, is that they don't have the same dream of inclusion or making the same money as white people. They have, they want to make the same money as a white person.
They want to make rapper money.
But they want to make rapper money, right. They're not really interested in the concept of actually like going to work and doing things in a certain way in order to like lift yourself up. The whole thing is like the whole community will come at you and say, you're trying to be white.
Well, I mean, we dealt with that to some extent, but we grew up in the New York area. And New York was sort of aspirational. Like that's the one thing that when I got to Philadelphia, that I found really weird, in that, like in New York, you know, you wanted, you know, it seemed like everything was available and everything was for you. When I got to Philadelphia, people were very, very quick to tell me what was for me and what was for white people.
Mm.
Oh, you're doing that white people shit. Oh, you're doing that. That's white people shit. Like
you're talking about people in the black community.
Like people in the black community, yeah.
Okay.
Like people in the black community, like, but they had been so beaten. Like the conclusion that I came to after years and years of being immersed in this soup is that they have just been so beaten down and the system has betrayed them for so long that they've given up all hope of ever becoming part of that system. It's not for them. And in New York, at the time that we were growing up, there was still that hope, like, you could rise up and you could do anything that they could do was open and available for us. You're going to have to work a little bit harder to get it,
mm-hmm.
but it was open and available for us. And you'd go into the city and party and you'd hang out and you'd be in clubs with all different kinds of people and nobody cared because you're all getting down.
Right.
Whereas in Philadelphia, when I got here, every set had their own spot. You know, you rarely saw, you know, upper middle class black people interacting with white people. You know, there weren't those places where you go like, oh, you know, New York, you had Bentleys and the Silver Shadow. Mm-hmm. Like, oh, look, it's upper middle class black people out dancing. How about that? Let's go have some fun.
Right.
There was no place like that here in Philly. Mm.
That's interesting, but it's probably, well, it's definitely true. It's your experience. So it's what you experienced. And listen, like Rob, you know me. I'm not necessarily like an integrationist per se. You know, I don't necessarily believe that, like, you know, that's the only way to go. My problem with it is that is exactly what you said. You kind of hit it on the nail. It's the thought process that you can't do any better or it's not going to be available to you. Stop trying. It's like, to me, it seems as if like the mentality is before you could even do anything, it's like you really got to fight these fucking horrible takes and mentalities that black people have. And it's not just like women. It's not just the men. It's not just the LGBTQ. And, you know, that's another thing. Like we take ourselves, it's the men are misogynistic. The women are overly feminized. And the gays are overly, they're a Carmichael gay, you know, which is at this point is like, this guy is like, I haven't seen his show, but I'm so tired of every time I turn on HBO Max seeing this boy in his underwear. Like, that's the first thing that pops up. And it's like, I'm thinking to myself, like, what type of message are they trying to send me by showing this guy in his underwear every time? And I've never watched the show, but I just read an article on The Root about some of the content. And
he is taking the concept of reality television to a different level.
What level is that?
I haven't seen the show yet, but from what I've read, he is opening the door and allowing regular people into his televised world, in which, you know, it's everything's a discovery. I don't know if you saw his stand-up special, Rothaniel.
I think I saw parts of it. I fell asleep.
He's a storyteller. He's very confessional. He wants to peel all the layers off and expose it all. I would say about, you know, the him in his underwear thing, I haven't seen those spots. I guess you and I are watching different programs on HBO Max. I've been watching a lot of The Godfather lately.
All you have to do is turn on the app.
That's what LSD will do for you.
All you have to do is turn on the app. It's right there on the top of the page.
But, you know, every commercial with a female in it has her in her swimsuit or her in her skivvies. So, you know, sex sells in America.
Is that sex?
Is it? I don't know. Is it? To somebody it is.
I guess. I'm not for the whole, like, I can even make an art. Listen, I could live without seeing ads with women scantily clad. I don't feel like those are things that really should be out there. In that way, I'm very 1950s. You know, what you do behind closed doors, once the door closes and everything, the whips, the chains come out, the whipped cream and all that other stuff and everything, clamps, you know, stamps, whatever it is, that's like fun and everything. But once you open up that door, I don't feel like kids should be exposed to any of that stuff. And that's just how I am. I just don't feel it. I don't feel it because it's like you're making, it's like almost like you want to get these kids involved in these arguments and these discussions before their time. And all they're interested in is, well, now it's just playing video games. Back in the day, it was going outside and playing, you know, but they're not interested in your sex talk, buddy. You know, it's like everybody is P. Diddy. And we sit up here and we criticize Diddy for all these parties that he had with consenting adults, you know, the stuff that he did with the allegations, that's something different. But, you know, the stuff that they did with consenting adults, that was just them. That's their freak. That's their thing.
Yeah.
You know, far be it from me to judge what another man is doing in his leisure time. I don't even care about what Carmichael is doing in his leisure time and everything. But the conversations about the race play, that's something different. I mean, that was like when I read that. And I guess somebody would say, well, watch the show. But no, I'm not going to watch the show. I'm going to have to rely upon, you know, reading an article in order to get an opinion on that, because I don't want to see him in his drawers. I see enough of him in his drawers whenever I go to the HBO app. It's just too much for me. I just can't. It's just foolishness. But I thought about, this is the guy that they use partially to bring down Cosby. It's like, can they be completely and totally polar opposites? Because apparently on his show, he talks about how he's a sexual deviant in his own way. And we all know Cosby was a sexual deviant. You know, we don't.
But there are different levels to sexual deviance. There's people who are into non-traditional things, and then there's incapacitating women and fucking them.
Oh, yeah.
Different level of deviance.
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, I was talking to Alexander. Big shout out to Big Cuz Alexander.
What up?
You know, and he was telling me a story, because, you know, Alexander, he was down with Miles Davis back in the day, and he was like, you know, he was doing his thing. He's a big time airline pilot, but he was friends with Miles. And he told me a story about Cosby that I won't repeat and everything, but he told me a story about Cosby, and Miles Davis was the one who actually was the one who did that. And then when Miles Davis died, apparently Cosby had some not too flattering things to say about Miles. And that was his boy. And Alexander's like, I always said that if I saw this Miles, I don't even know if I should be telling this story,
because
you know it's him, but he said I felt like if I ever saw him in person, I would tell him. And I'm not going to tell the story because it's not my story to tell, but
he
did cross paths with him. He did say words to him, and he said Cosby's face went white as a ghost as he told him that. And he told him, he said, you ain't got to call your security. I ain't going to knock you over. But I just thought that was some low-down dirty shit that you said about Miles at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And it just goes to show you that even back then, in order to save face and in order to look good, you know, we have a history of Black people of dragging other Black men and other Black women down in order to elevate ourselves, mm-hmm. which kind of made me feel really good this week when I saw that J. Cole video, because J. Cole came out with that, with the song on his album. He came out with the new album and he dissed Kendrick Lamar. And did you see that video clip with J. Cole?
I haven't seen it, no.
J. Cole's up there, he's at a concert in front of all these people, and he said, you know what? There's something that's just not right with my soul right now. I made this record, and it was about Kendrick Lamar. And honestly, Kendrick Lamar is one of the most talented rappers, one of the best dudes in the game to ever do it. And he said that was a goofball moment, and I apologize. And his record just dropped. He said, I apologize for that. It was the most low vibrational type of thing that I've done ever. And everything. And I don't want to even bring my soul down to that level. And I want to go back and I want to elevate to where I come from. So if Kendrick, he said, Kendrick, if you decide that you're going to come back at me and spit bars at me, you know, I'm just going to take it on the chin because I earned that,
mm-hmm.
and everything. And that gave me a feeling of, you know what I'm saying? You know,
J. Cole's a stand-up dude. Like he seems to be one of the few who hasn't, like, all these guys conflate their who they are with what they do. And J. Cole just seems to be like, yo, I'm a dude who raps.
Yeah.
Like, not a rapper. I'm a dude who raps. Like, that ain't my whole being. Like, I don't need all the trappings of being a rap star. I just like to spit bars.
Yeah.
And the rest of it is all. And that's something that far more people need to see and understand. Like, you know, you are what you are. You're not what you do. Like, you are what you do in terms of your behavior, but your job is your job. And that's not supposed to be everything about you.
People need to normalize apologizing.
You know, being humble.
Being humble.
You know, but, you know, in our community, that's soft. First thing people are going to say, oh, he's soft. You know, people gonna think they can steal on you because you apologizing to people. And you got to be willing to wear that.
Yeah.
Like, okay, you think you can steal on me? Good for you. I'm gonna keep going. You stay there. I'm gonna keep going. See you later.
Right. You know? Keep it pushing.
Yeah.
I really it was a good feeling to see that. Mm-hmm. And I really just wish that instead of like taking up some of these messages from some of these other guys that aren't really putting out any valuable lessons, you know, get money is not a lesson. You know, do whatever you have to do. Stunt on women, that's not a message. It's nowhere is that going to help you. You know, my brother, I don't have to be mad at my brother because my brother is good at what he does. And it's the same thing that I do. That's a message. That's something that you can build off of. You know what? I made a mistake and I'm not too small that I can't look at this situation and I can't say, I'm sorry for what I did. And there's nothing wrong with that. And that's something that we need to, that's how you grow.
Yeah.
It's actually how you build and how you grow. You know, I had a friend that I hadn't talked to in years and I did him wrong. And everything. First thing I did was apologize, bro. Because I'm not that person I was back then. I'm not. You know, I made a mistake. I recognize I made a mistake. They still can't whoop my ass. So why would that's not soft, that's strength. It's strength, bro.
But you know that in the community that's perceived as soft. You know that that's not what we do. You know, that's right. Not what black men do. You've seen too many fights at the basketball court to know that's not. Yeah. Hell, we had a time where brothers was getting down and risking their liberty and their life because somebody had scuffed their Adidas. You want to talk about some dumb backwards shit that we were engaged in? Thanks. Like because somebody scuffed your Adidas, somebody accidentally stepped on your shoe, you had to, it became, you know, brothers would go to a 7 because somebody accident. You in New York City, it's crowded as shit. Somebody's going to step on your shoe at some point. But you got to act like this motherfucker came looking. This motherfucker walked out the projects looking for you today to fuck your shoes up. Like he even knows who you are.
Well, the truth of the matter is, Rob, we're talking about aggression. And that aggression is basically based upon the anger that we have collectively as a people, unfortunately, in many cases. And collectively, it's based upon the inability to do certain things. The feeling that we've gone completely. I bet you if you asked 100% of Black Americans in the United States to that now under the age of 30 to finish Black is beautiful. Black is beautiful, brown is fit. They don't even know that. And that's something that was like, you know, that was like a mantra that was like told to me by my parents to tell me like, hey, you know what I'm saying? No matter what they say, Black is beautiful. Black is beautiful, baby. You know, there's no ugly here. The only ugly is what we pull out of it. And I'm just really disappointed. I'm just really disappointed in the community. Like, honestly speaking, I'm disappointed in the women because, you know, as a mother, you don't understand what the value is, what your value is as a mother. You know, the first person, Rob, you love your mom. I love my mom. You ask any Black man on this earth, who's the first person that he loves? And it's his mother. And for the first time, and this is what I have to say to these, to like, you know, a lot of these black women with pushing these feminist agendas, this is the first time in the history of the Black community that we can honestly say that it's a very strong possibility that their mothers don't love them back as much. If you're sitting there and you're downing Black men in front of your son, what do you think your son is? How is he going to grow up to be strong? And then the argument against that is that I don't want him to grow up to be strong. because I don't want that man to grow up to be a woman beater or abuser or something like that. But that's what you're doing is the actual opposite. You're going to get the opposite effect because if it, what makes people mad, what makes a woman feel mad? What makes a woman feel a smart, educated black woman who has everything going for her, what makes her feel madder more than anything else? And the answer is very simple. It's being disrespected and being underappreciated, being undervalued. So you're going to automatically undervalue your sons. You're cutting that off half of your line there. And how are these men actually going to come out? And, you know, the goal as a single mom used to be to raise a man to be a provider and to be like, you know, a husband, a protector, everything that a father was, you know, that an absentee father wasn't and everything. And I'm not sure that that's what the goal is now.
I don't know if that's the goal now, but a lot of that was toxic too. Like, you know, the whole, you know, you should not go to your 11-year-old and be like, you the man of the house. No, he's not. He's a fucking kid. And he shouldn't be carrying your bullshit. No, he is not the protector of this house. He's 11 years old. He's a fucking boy. Mm. But that's, you hear that shit all the time. You know, oh, that's my king. Yo, that's your son. That ain't your king. That's your son.
Right.
Keep him in the proper box, in the proper lane. Like, let him be a child. Let him explore the world and discover it in his own terms, not through your bullshit.
Right. Well, the problem with that is that, you know, we could actually explain that and we can actually talk about that. But unless we're on a show where we're disrespecting black women at the same time, which is something I'm not into.
I don't want to disrespect anybody, but, you know, at some point, some people got to go to therapy and find out that, you know, and this is, I'll say this from my experience, because I've interacted with some women who had very challenging relationships with their parents, but refused to go and do the work and understand, like, yo, I get it. You love your parents. I hear you. I love mine too. That doesn't mean that those people that we love, they were doing the best that they knew how. Now, there's a very good chance that they didn't know shit. So they were doing this thing the best that they could with one hand tied behind their back. And you got to forgive them for what they didn't know, what they couldn't provide you because they didn't know. But also acknowledge that, hey, look, I can love them and respect them, but also still realize the mistakes that they made and try to improve upon that instead of just playing the same tape back.
I'll go one step further.
Too often people are afraid to make the change moving forward because they don't want to disrespect what came before them. I'm like, well, the two aren't really related. Like, don't just keep fucking something up because they fucked it up. You don't want to hurt their feelings. That's stupid.
Right. That's like the anti-survival.
Yeah.
They have these mindsets, like they have them all fucked up. And the main issue with it, the whole problem with it is like very simple. If I want to know something about how a black woman is feeling or perceives something, my first thing is like, I'm always going to go to my daughter because she is a black woman. Mm-hmm. She's a mother. She's experiencing this life and in real time. You know, this new black feminist movement just says, don't listen. Don't even get our opinions. Our opinions don't matter. They're too toxic. They're too, you know, automatically they've decided like what our opinions are going to be. You know, like this guy, he really struck me the wrong way, bro, because he was saying a lot of things that were just like ridiculous. Some, you know, about, and I'm not saying that this is not how some black men are, but some are not all.
No.
So it's like, it's so lazy and everything. And that's really what I wanted to tell him. It's like, you know what? You're lazy opining about all this stuff really doesn't do anything. It sounds great and a sound bite, and you get the clap, you know, like, yay, you know, like, oh, you know, you're right, you got her, you know, you got him, sister, and this and that and this. But you're not enlightening yourself. You're not doing anything. You're not really doing anything that's going to help you. You're taking a marginalized group, black people, and you're further marginalizing yourself within that group, because now it's black women only. And the only opinions that you're ever going to actually come through with, or you're going to listen to or believe, are going to have to be women that are like you. And it just seems so lazy and so stupid to me. You know, I mean, at least you listen to the opinions. The way that you find things out, you know, you read divergent opinions, you listen to people with different...
Well, you just said read, you know, people don't read.
Okay, well, all right, so you TikTok different opinions.
Well, but TikTok feeds you the same thing, though, because TikTok is an algorithm, just like Facebook and Instagram and all of these social media outlets are all designed to feed you more of what it thinks you like to keep you engaged. So finding diverse voices becomes harder and harder because what you engage with, they're going to feed you more of.
I would take it a step further and say finding diverse voices is impossible. Because of the algorithms.
Nothing's impossible, but you gotta work hard for it. You gotta do some searches. You gotta generate some searches and, you know, sort of trick the algorithm a little bit and push it towards your diversity.
And the algorithms are all the craze. You know, these algorithms, they're putting to these places and they put you in these groups and nobody is the better for the algorithm. And I was watching an old movie, Clockers, with young Angelina Jolie in her first movie. She was like basically a teenager.
She was in Clockers?
At the time. She was, I don't think it was Clockers, it was okay. Hackers.
Okay, Hackers. Okay.
Hackers. And, you know, it's all about the hackers coming in and they're going to improve the world. And, you know, it's like sort of like the same thing. These companies, these guys, they all say we have to make the world a better place. And this all started in the early 90s. So just in case people don't know, it's like you're really 30 years into this new computer world that you're in, 30 to 40 years in. Is the world a better place because they're in control? It seems to me like they're the same assholes that the other Biffs were before them, that were working on a different system that didn't require computers. They just do it differently. So now the computer guys are the ones that actually make all the money. They control all the algorithms. They move all the people into different situations. They're still exploiting women. They're probably exploiting them worse because they've created great places like OnlyFans online, where you can actually see it, where your daughter has a choice as soon as she turns 18. To show every person in the world her naughty bits and make money off of it. And just eliminate any type of teaching that you might have had or any type of moral upbringing that she might have been exposed to. And it's better because of the fact that it was brought to you by these guys who make computers. They've actually turned out to be worse. You know, we're not making this world a better place. They're making the world a worse place. And on top of that, they have you marginalized and they have you amped up based upon being marginalized while they're making all this money and they're setting you up to basically be useless, because now you're useless, period. If you're not, pretty soon OnlyFans is going to be the only way that poor people show any value. And we see it in the community. Look at all the big butts. And like, you know, the oversized boobies and everything. It's like, you know, do you have a mind? Does it matter? I don't know, bro. Maybe I should just give up.
So I watched, and I've seen the movie before, The Big Short.
Yeah.
If you want to get pessimistic about things, that movie will make you pessimistic about things. But it's all true. And it's a lot of what you're saying right there. I mean, they're, you know, these guys, they created these programs to make money. So, I mean, you had junk mortgages being sold as equity, as bonds, you know, and they just kept as long as the money was coming in, nobody cared. Nobody cared. And they, you know, we had the collapse and now it's happening again. And, you know, the thing that, you know, they made it seem like you're a bad person for betting against the economy, but are you really a bad person for betting against the economy? If everybody's taking the economy and screwing it, are you then a bad person for betting against that? Like,
good question. That's a good question. You have to take, the answer is always to take what you possibly can. And you only have a certain amount of time in your life to make the most amount of money that you're going to make in whatever field that it is that you have. The majority of people in this old system between 20 and 50 is where you basically made your money. You know, we're outside of that. We're outside of that curve, supposedly.
But you're about to be outside. You're about to be at the edge of the demo.
Yeah.
So like, you know, they sell advertising 12 yeah. plus 25 to 54, 18 mm-hmm. to 54, 25 to 54. So you're about to be outside the demo.
Yeah.
You're about to actually not matter.
And let me tell you why that is so perfect for the system. Because if you've ever read the book, Think and Grow Rich, that book will tell you that the majority of the people in this world who made fortunes, the Rockefellers, the, just everybody, mm-hmm. you know, all these rich guys, even like Colonel Sanders, for example, well past their 50th birthday when their yeah. ideas hit and they actually made it. So what is that actually saying? What are they actually trying to do? What they're actually trying to do is they're actually trying to stop the actual movers and shakers who aren't 20-year-olds. You know, I'm sorry. Your movers and shakers in 20s in the clubs and everything, and there's nothing wrong with that. That's where you should be. But you don't get serious until, a lot of these people don't get serious until they reach their 40s and their 50s. And they're knocking these people out. They're telling you that they don't matter. Because that helps to keep the status quo. So if you don't buy into the system early, they're going to make sure that you're locked out of the system late. And that's basically holding back the entire society. It just basically keeps everything in a stagnant point. And it's not good. And some people would say that, a lot of young people would say that that's actually okay with them. Because, you know, we don't need these old people eating up X, Y, and Z at this point. But the truth of the matter is that the old people used to be not only just contributing, they actually added to the pie. But the system is all mixed up and fucked up.
It's also a different system now. I mean, you know, one of the other things that The Big Short sort of brings to the forefront is that, you know, banking used to be a very boring kind of business, and computers have made it. There's all these different ways now to make money, to package securities, to bet against securities, to short things, all that stuff. And so the ways that we make money now are different. You have these finance bros, man. You know, my daughter has one of her buddies who went to school, and, you know, my daughter went to a pretty good private school. One of her buddies studied finance. So she walked out of college making $90,000 a year. In 2 years, she's already gotten 3 raises. You know, chick went and spent, so she went for Easter, not Easter, what was the holiday? For St. Patrick's Day, she went to Ireland. Mm-hmm. You know, she went and did some time in Ibiza last summer. Like, she's doing that thing. And this is, you know, the money is coming in, the money is coming into different people's hands now. It's about financial innovators. It's not about actual innovators. Remember, we're a service economy now.
Okay, but when she turns 40, what is that going to look like for her?
Well,
is she going to still continue to climb? You can't continue to pay 21-year-olds out of college $90,000, $100,000 select ones, because, like, you know, a lot of people would be listening to the show right now and they'd be saying, I'm going to know where the fuck she's getting her job. Because yeah, a lot of these people
they're not going to go study finance.
Right.
They're not going to go be an econ major. Like, the majors that you got to study now suck for regular people.
Right.
Like, you were an accounting major. I was a radio, television, and film major, which at right. Temple, you know, they called RTF, which the rest of the school said rather than fail.
Right.
Yeah. I watched Platoon on Tuesday morning and then talked about it on Thursday. That was my college major.
Right. Most like we used to say about the, serious. Like we used to say about people who are in the School of Communications. Like, why are you even here? You know, like what exactly does that, where you're going to get a degree in talking to people? You know, that was the joke. And we graduated with our FCC licenses, you and I both.
Yes.
You know, so that was like, you know, 3/4 of the degree that some of these people paid for. I can make that joke. And we already got it in high school. But I mean, the economy is different.
My whole college education now is right here in the phone.
Right. It's on your phone. So, you know, I mean, look, you know, we were talking before the show pregame about the NIL situation.
Yeah.
Right. And, you know, it's about getting what you can. As I'm not knocking these kids. You know, I wish that if they would have had NILs when I was in high school,
and I would not have been at Temple.
I would have taken the partial scholarship and worked my way up.
You'd have gone to the highest bidder wherever it was.
Exactly. I would have, you know, there would have been no thought whatsoever about going to Howard and walking on the yard. I would have been working on my jumper continually. Mm-hmm. It wasn't like as if I didn't have options. I chose not to because I was burnt out. But if you're telling me that I could go to a school like, you know, like you said, go to a school like Drexel or what was the school or another school?
You go to UNC Wilmington.
UNC Wilmington and get a 50,000, gets 50,000 hours for playing guard for UNC Wilmington. Guess what? I'm a baller again.
Exactly. Get on. Giddy up.
I'm a baller. You know what I'm saying? I never stop playing. I never stop playing. So it's a different world. So I get that. You know, but it's hard for, like you were saying, it's hard for some of these other colleges to compete.
It's hard for a lot of these colleges to compete because you don't, you know, now you're sort of at the mercy. Now there's a sort of a reverse economics thing in that when we were coming up, remember all the free agents, you know, you always talked about free agents and they always looked at LA, New York, because you had to go someplace where you could get a really good off-season job, right?
Right.
But now when you're looking at the college NIL thing, Philadelphia, we have every major sport, including soccer, lacrosse, right? We have 6 Division I teams. There can't possibly be enough money for all of these things to succeed. Whereas now you look at like an Alabama. Yo, in Tuscaloosa, there's only one thing. It's that Crimson Tide.
That's right.
Everything. Everybody's throwing all their money at the Crimson Tide. There's no place else to put your money. Same thing if you go to Ann Arbor. There's no place else to throw your money. You can go to Detroit an hour and a half away. But if you want to be a big dog, right here is where you can make the difference. Mm-hmm. And so you have these schools in isolated areas where they are everything. And now they can compete. So now you have, even when you go down to the smaller level, like a UNC Wilmington, that's a beach school. But if you're in the UNC Wilmington community, where else are you putting your money?
Right.
So it's really upended a lot of stuff. You know, but the really critical part of it, like I saw a kid this year who jumped in the portal. He's going to get some money. But probably in terms of basketball, it's probably a step back for him. It's probably going to be, and you're going to see a lot of these dudes make decisions based on the check that they're going to get. And let me just say, I said it before, but 18 years old, I'd have made the same dumb mistake. I'd have taken the check probably over the situation that is right for me and helping me grow and become the person that I need to become.
Right.
Like I'd have come out of college 2 steps behind with some money in my pocket. Oh, not really. I'd have blown that shit. Let's be
right.
Real.
Exactly. Right. You know, we're going to keep it real. Yeah. I would have bought the Nissan Z 300. We're going back to 89.
Yeah.
You know, like there, 89. I'm buying a Nissan and I'm just like cruising around and I'm spending all my money in clubs.
Putting big speakers in the back.
Yeah.
That should be thumping down the street.
Yeah. It's gone. The money's gone. I'm not even going to think about it.
And we would have put ourselves behind developmentally, but we wouldn't have known it until it was too late. And that's what some of these kids are going to find out, that they took the money, but they cheated themselves.
And unfortunately, they don't have the wise old sage brothers to actually like give him that type of advice and say, boy, you're being stupid. You know, and that's really what it comes down to sometimes. Sometimes it's about, boy, you being stupid. And, you know, you can't tell me, you know, I just have a hard time with what's going on with these people. And I guess like, because we had elders who taught us better. We knew to listen to an old motherfucker before we just dismissed them. And we weren't listening to them waiting for an opportunity to dismiss them. Well, sometimes we were, but, you know, for the most part, we were trying to.
You gave them the benefit of the doubt.
You give them the benefit of the doubt. Now it's like they act as if the benefit of the doubt is dangerous. And that's the part that's a problem, because we're not learning from each other. We can't. I'm not learning from the women, and the men are not learning. The men are not learning from the women, and the women are not learning from the men. So it's like now we're just all at odds. You know, we're hyenas and lions, brother. 56 minutes. You're right. We always got this, bro.
Hyenas and lions.
Hyenas and lions. Mr. Brooks, how's everything going beyond that? Beyond the conversations? I mean, I hope that we covered some stuff and we had some enlightenment going on here rather than just sounding like
a frustrated old man. But, you know, my perspective is so wide and so varied because I come, you know, I'm from a mixed family. So right. I've always had to, not always, I shouldn't say always, because there was that period in time where I didn't quite understand it. Like my mom was just my mom. It wasn't until I got to school. And I remember my man Peanut running down the hallway screaming, yo, Rob got a white mom. Rob's mom is white. I was like, oh shit.
But she's not. Really? She is.
She isn't.
She is, but she isn't. Colombiana.
She's Colombian. She's an immigrant. Right. But at the same time, to the rest of the world, Lucy Brooks is white.
Right.
You know. So I have very, you know, my perspective on a lot of this stuff is very varied and very, you know, I understand all the shades of gray in between just because I've lived a lot of it. Mm. You know, I have relatives who, you know, at one point, you know, were disdainful just because of the color of my father's skin.
Right.
And have watched them come around.
Right.
To a better understanding.
Well, and the problem with young people today is like, what I will say the problem with young people today is, let me put on my grumpy old man and say, the problem with young people today is they don't understand the value. Is that like
Grover / Darth Vader?
I don't know. Grover Vader. I don't know. Whatever. But the problem with young people today with that is that they don't see any value in that conversation. They're so mad at their own situations. And you know what it comes down to is that a lot of the things that we said with this generation is a generation that was born and raised in insecurity, personal and financial distress. And it's not just the Black community. It's also a lot of people in other communities as well.
Hey, look at Morgan Wallen.
Yeah. He can't keep his shit together.
No.
He can't keep his shit together. He can't. He's got a little bit of money and everything, and he knows like enough. He knows enough to say the N-word sometimes when he shouldn't. And he knows enough to just basically say baller. Because that's the dichotomy of the young people today. They can be racist and yelling baller simultaneously. And it's weird. It's awkward. It's weird. But someone should be having a conversation with him about why it's weird and, you know, really working through that. But that's not what we get. We get him canceled and we get a publicist telling him to go and do X, Y, and Z for a certain amount of time. And then they just throw another beer in his hand and they just let him go nuts.
Yeah, well, I think he's going to have to, unlike Amy Winehouse, I think he's going to have to go to rehab.
You think
and
so?
He can't say no, no, no this time.
Well,
dude, throwing a chair off a 6-story building is a serious, like he dodged a bullet and a half that nobody got hurt.
You could kill somebody.
You could easily kill somebody like that.
And that would be the end of Morgan. Well, you know, in a way, it's like, Does he want it? Does he want that? Does he want it to end? You know, it's a trap. This is what people don't understand about the entertainment business, is that until you actually get there and you're in that spot, and I speak about this as, like, you know, just basically as a confidant of someone who was in that situation. And I can tell you, it twists you up in a fucking pretzel.
Oh, yeah.
You know, it has you thinking that, like, you know, very few people can really handle that pressure and everything and handle it well. You never got peace. You never get peace. You don't get any, you don't, friendship, forget about friendship. You know, your friends are gone as soon as you stop doing for them. You know, I always made sure that I positioned myself, and you know this for a fact, I positioned myself so I wasn't on a payroll.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And on the other hand, it's like you're actually paying out to, like, you know, be around. So yeah. This is kind of like, it's a leveling thing. I can tell you anything that I need to tell you, honestly, as a friend, because I want you to escape. I want you to be okay. You know, most people don't have anyone in that situation to help them or even guide them through it. And even with that, it still didn't help, but so much.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's always going to be pitfalls. There's always going to be, you have people that want to be you. And when they see you around that person, they assume that you want to be them as well, because that's what they want. And that is like pretty much, I guess it's kind of the synopsis of the whole show, you know, because a lot of these feminists, they're angry at men, and they want to beat them. They want to, you go back in a time, you know, and listen, we all have our crosses to bear. You know, I personally grew up with a father who for a very long time was an alcoholic and everything. And when he comes home after drinking, you're walking on eggshells. It's the most powerless feeling that you can have as a child, knowing someone can come in and has that much power over you. That doesn't mean that there wasn't love there. It's a different generation, didn't know how to actually go through it. And that's not excusing anything that happened in that house and anything or during those times. But you talk about it and you deal with it. We've all been powerless. We all feel powerless at certain times in our lives and everything. But how you deal with that trauma and how you move around it makes a big difference. It does.
Absolutely. I agree. You know, you got to see all the alcoholics in my house.
Yeah.
We had lots of them.
Yeah. And really, like, you know, this generation doesn't deal with the alcoholics as much.
No.
You know, they're our parents are, or our generation, we're on different shit. We're on pills. They were on crack. They're doing different things and everything, but alcoholism was the way when we were growing up. And there were so many people that were working alcoholics and living alcoholics and functioning alcoholics. And that's the generation that we came from. Mm-hmm. So it's like, you know, I don't want to normalize trauma. I'm not saying I want to normalize trauma.
But like, it's normalized in that, it's something that most people experience in some degree, because the young mind just interprets things however it wants to. I mean, there are things that your parents did that were absolutely benign, but your young mind went and took it and threw it in a different direction just because you didn't know. You had, you know, your mind wasn't formed yet.
Right.
So there are things that they did that were, you know, truly they meant nothing by it, but you're like, oh, that was, no, it wasn't. But, right, you know, you interpreted it that way at six, and now you're still carrying that thing around with you.
Right. Like, I had my sister say something to me years ago about an event that happened, and I think I told that story here a long time ago. And to me, it was like innocuous. I'm like, yo, listen, I'm your little brother. I used to look up to you. You know, she was my protector.
Mm-hmm.
You know, but when she was my tormentor, she was the worst tormentor, because she was my protector, and she knew how to get at me. You know, so we all have our crosses to bear. But hey, look, 41st episode of Born in Trouble, Mr. Brooks with the good looks. You know, thank you once again for coming and joining me on this show. You know, I know it's very difficult with your baseball schedule now, your world traveling, eating hot dogs in different stadiums, Cracker Jack, singing national anthems.
Dude, you know I don't eat hot dogs anymore, unless they're vegan.
Only
Denver,
vegan.
Denver, Colorado, they have them at Coors Field. Yes, they do. I'll have some when I get out there.
There you go. Well, listen, I'm going to get out of here, and I'm going to go over to my Crack app and see if I can find the what was that Magical Negroes movie, since they pulled it from the movie theaters already.
Which one?
The organization, I forget what it was called, the Organization of Magical Negroes.
Oh, that hasn't even come out yet.
No, actually, it did come out.
Oh, did it? And yeah, it's gone already?
Yeah, they just pulled it because apparently black people and white people don't like it.
Wow. I was kind of interested in seeing that. Do you have MGM?
I do.
American Fiction is on MGM.
Okay.
You check that out.
Will do. Will do.
Like, seriously.
Will do. Born in Trouble, 41st episode. Everybody out there listening.
I'm going to go get myself a slice of purple pie.
Purple pie.
Purple pie. Purple pie. Purple pie. Purple pie.